As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Starcast, the German football pod, brought to you by The Athletic. In today's episode, Bayern Munich win a sixth title as they're crowned inaugural Christmas champions after their last-minute win at Bayer Leverkusen, and Leroy Sané gets subbed on and off. Big city club Hertha looked like heading for the small time following a 4-1 defeat at Freiburg, and having denied Lucien Favre a last Christmas, Borussia Dortmund concede from a different corner in time-honored fashion at Union Berlin. All of this and more in Stahlcast. With me today, spreading seasonal gifts of football knowledge and wisdom, is Christoph Biermann. But talking of presents, don't forget we have a get one, gift one offer available for you at the moment. Go to theathletic.com/starcastpod to take advantage of this very fine offer. Christoph, before we get going and talk about the games on match day 13, the last match day before Christmas, I think we have to talk about a miscarriage of justice. One Bundesliga-based coach took a very decent but by no means extraordinary team all the way to the greatest triumph possible, but was criminally overlooked by FIFA. Where was Urs Fischer in the voting?
Okay. A huge scandal overlooked by many, but luckily not by you.
And yeah, not by you, Christoph, because you wrote the book literally on Union Berlin.
But I'm still astonished about the development Union has made during this season. And it's even more impressive because we were thinking, yeah, the main influence was the fantastic transfer of Max Kruse, who also inspired other teams in the past, particularly Werder Bremen. But he's out injured. And in a week where, in one of the many weeks that Max Kruse is missing because of his injury, they were drawing against Bayern Munich, a bit unluckily drawing at Stuttgart, where they're conceding two late goals, and beating Borussia Dortmund. And that was altogether very impressive. It's a fantastic achievement for not only Urs Fischer, but for the whole team and for the whole club. With this Christmas coming closer, I think we can say that now Union is the surprise team of the season.
Well, it certainly looks like it. They're up in six, just 1 point off Borussia Dortmund after that 2-1 win over them on Friday night. Don't laugh, Christoph, it's the truth. I'm just reading out numbers here. And as you said, the Max Kruse narrative no longer explains what's going on, at least not in recent weeks. Did they just take advantage of Dortmund's terrible defending, or was there some underlying dominance or underlying quality that perhaps could be missed by the more casual viewers?
No, I think in the end they deserved the win. I mean, they got the two goals from set pieces, again from set pieces, like so often, but they created a lot of goal chances also from open play, and compared to last season, Union shows a huge development in what they could create up front, the opposing goal, and they scored. You have the numbers at hand. I think the third most goal in the among all Bundesliga teams, and that is surprising as well. But you're right. It tells a lot about the quality of the players, maybe overlooked qualities, about the team spirit, the coherence, but also a lot about the work of the coaching staff around Urs Fischer and Urs Fischer himself. So, because you have the impression when you see them, they are not just flying like what you sometimes have, that teams play better than they actually are. But when you see them play, it looks rock solid altogether in defense, but also that they are able to create more goal chances now. Yeah, again, very, very impressive.
Absolutely. And as you said, they've scored 27 goals. That's one more than Borussia Dortmund. And if you compare the two teams, the two squads, especially in attack, that's not a stat that you would have thought is possible ahead of the start of the season, especially with their main goal threat of last season, Sebastian Andersson leaving and Max Kruse being injured, as we said, over the last few weeks. So an unbelievable achievement yet again from Union. 2019-2020 has been fantastic for them in all respects. But the same cannot be said of Borussia Dortmund. Now, Joachim Löw has been making the point that Mats Hummels has hit the wall. He did on Friday, quite literally, lashing out angrily at a advertising board after the defeat on Friday in front of a television camera, and then proceeding to blame one or two colleagues, even though he didn't name them, for mistakes that he felt was unacceptable. I mean, why is it that now Lucien Favre has moved on, Dortmund's vulnerability at set pieces and in defence altogether just doesn't seem to be able to be dealt with? Or are we simply having to wait a little bit longer for Edin Terzic to right the many wrongs, sorry, Christoph, that seem to have become part of this Dortmund team, especially when it comes playing without the ball under Lucien Favre?
Borussia Dortmund is a team that conceded far too many goals after set pieces, and it were two again. And Mats Hummels was criticizing Emre Can without naming him, because he should have been the player to mark Marvin Friedrich of Union Berlin before the second goal, but he wasn't seen anywhere close. And I think that's something that shows a bit the problems that Borussia Dortmund are having. It's a lack of concentration. You could also see on Friday that there was a general lack of energy, and they are paying a bit the price for having a lot of younger players, not the majority, but they have some younger players, and I think it has been a straining season so far. But that's not the real explanation. I think in the end we must see that under Lucien Favre a lot of things have deteriorated over the times, and obviously he also had lost the team at the end of his reign, and now Terzic and maybe also Michael Zorc have to reorganize the squad that was okay when they were winning in Bremen, but it wasn't enough at Union Berlin. And I think there is a lot of work to do for Terzic, because right now it looks like a real chance that Borussia Dortmund could miss the Champions League, and that would be a major blow for the club, and they have to desperately avoid it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That is the worst case scenario. It's a real catastrophe if they were to miss out on top four. They're 2 points behind Wolfsburg now, who won on Sunday against Stuttgart 1-0, a pretty edgy game. And it is that fear of missing out on the Champions League that I think ultimately led them to pull the plug on Favre prematurely. But we'll have to see if that one works out. I think we need to talk about Berlin's other club, though. They would love to be in Union's position. Hertha down in 14th on 13 points, just 3 points of the relegation playoff spot. Where, I mean, your Bielefeld is certainly sitting with 10 points. And they lost 4-1 at Freiburg in one of the worst performances of the season for them. I think it's probably fair to say.
Also fair to say that so far Hertha has been the disappointment of the season so far, because when you look at how much money they invest within the last 12 months, I mean, last winter they were celebrating themselves a bit as the team in the world that spent the most money on the transfer market. And they also spent more money in summer. And even if you say, yeah, we have to develop a team and it's not all clicking in a minute, it's a failure. And also, I mean, they were not only losing 1-4 at Freiburg, they also had a terrible 0-0 draw in the week at home to Mainz. And so if you put that all together, I think there are a lot of question marks around Bruno Labbadia, because you don't see any kind of development, and all the questions about Michael Preetz will come back. Is he the right man after 250 years at Hertha BSC to turn things around? What will happen with investor Lars Windhorst, who provided the money for the big investments? And I think it will be not the nicest Christmas for the people at Hertha.
No, it's certainly not looking good. As you said, question marks about Bruno Labbadia being asked. I think before the start of the season, there were doubts that he might not be the manager that takes Hertha all the way to the promised land of European places. Now there are doubts whether he can keep them up almost. Been quite a dramatic fall. What will happen with Windhorst? There were some stories about him refusing or maybe halting the last payment of some of the investment money that was supposed to come in. Are Hertha in danger of sort of losing him, or is it too late for him to walk away because he's kind of all in with his money now?
Yeah, there's too much money in to just leave. I think the situation is a bit unclear why the payments have been postponed. Some people are speculating that he is trying to put Hertha under pressure, because I mean the situation here is he is a minority investor, so he is not in the driving seat to make decisions, but he has put so much money into the club that he is in a position where he can apply some pressure also via the advisory board, where three of his people are placed, among them Jens Lehmann. And I think he can't be satisfied, as nobody at Hertha can be satisfied. So I think if there is a unified feeling between the ultras of Hertha and Lars Windhorst, it's disappointment of what has happened in recent months. So because it's just not enough for what they put in money and work and energy.
I mean, it's hard to see that a team that features Cunha and Piontek and Luka Bacchio and Guendouzi and Darida and Stark and that's just midfield playing so badly.
It seems like as if Labbadia is lacking a plan, or I think he surely will have a plan, but it turns out to be very difficult to implement it. He has been complaining before the start of the season that the team was lacking leaders. I don't know if that's one of the explanations. It looks a bit like Matteo Guendouzi, who came on loan from Arsenal. He looks a bit like this on the field. But if that's true, I think it's interesting again that somebody who comes in late as a loan player seems to be the leader of the team. So if there's a leader missing or not, or if there is a plan there or not, nothing has been working so far.
I think you're right. I mean, expecting Guendouzi to lead the line on loan from Arsenal, it's a bit of an indictment, really, for this Hertha team. And if there's one, I guess, criticism we can point at their transfer policy, is that it doesn't seem to have a structure inside the team. There are a lot of players there, and perhaps that's inevitable when you're starting a new project. There are a lot of players there who you think are probably just there because of a pretty big paycheck, not necessarily because they believe in Bruno Labbadia and Hertha as a club that much. At least that's the feeling we're getting at the moment. Maybe I'm being a little bit unfair, but it is a team devoid of character, at least at the moment, it seems to me.
There is a lot of individual qualities, and but there is, it seems, all loose and not connected. And in a way, Union Berlin is the exact opposite, because you would say, yeah, there is talent in this squad, and maybe more than people would think, but especially they have a lot, they have fit their things together, and they working as a team on the pitch, they acting like a team off the pitch, and that is what you're not seeing at their blue friends from the other end of the city.
Friends in inverted commas, of course, because since they've been reunited in the Bundesliga, there is no love lost, at least not between.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
The Ultras. Christoph, is it cruel to talk about Schalke? I feel, you know, you don't want to kick somebody who's already down, but I think we have to. They activated the Huub Stevens protocol, bringing back their Dutch manager of the century, I think they officially voted.
Yeah, yes,
but that's
of
last
course.
Last century, unfortunately. In this one, he's back for his fourth stint in Gelsenkirchen, but even his messianic properties weren't quite enough to stop Schalke going down once more to the 29th game without a win. They lost 1-0 against Arminia Bielefeld at home. And you wonder, is there anything that can stop Schalke going all the way to the Bundesliga 2 the way they're going at the moment?
I don't know. It's when you see them play, it looks like probably the worst team that has ever played in the Bundesliga, because what we are saying about Hertha is they have a lot of individual qualities and they don't get it together. And when you look at Schalke, you think they are almost no individual quality there anymore, although I think a lot of player will find it sometimes later in their career, maybe not at Schalke anymore, and they don't get it together. And so, and Arminia Bielefeld is also a team with its limitations. So
that's very nicely put. Yeah,
I think the general feeling among Schalke fans is now, all the question most of them ask is, okay, we accept it, we'll be go down maybe as the worst team in the history of the Bundesliga and so on, but what then? What can we do when we're in the second division? Because they will be a second division team with a quarter of a billion in debt, and also I think a lot of people will be players will be out of contract when they go down, so they don't get any transfer fees, so they will, I don't know, where they start from scratch almost with youth players or whatever, so that you don't even have the fantasy that they will rebound in style and return very fast. And so it's not only this season, it's also the future for Schalke actually looks totally bleak.
It does, but then again, they're only only 6 points off the relegation playoff spot. And maybe with another managerial change over Christmas, they can still rebound. It should be possible to pick up a few more points with this team. They're not unbelievably bad. It's just they're totally devoid of any sort of confidence. Alexander Zorninger has been mooted as a possible replacement of David Wagner. What do you think? Is that a viable option?
Maybe.
Or even Lucien Favre, I've seen mentioned as well.
But I think it's nothing that is attractive for anybody who has been coaching in the Champions League 5 days ago, or was it 10 days ago? No, I think when they were looking for a new coach before they signed Manuel Baum, I was saying here that they should look for a coach with a lot of experience and maybe somebody who can play the role of the father to these players, because you said it. I mean, they are very likely not as bad as players as they look like right now. But it needs somebody who approaches them with a lot of warmth, a lot of support, with some decent structure in their play. So for me, so if I had to decide who will become the next Schalke manager, it would be Friedhelm Funkel, who is very experienced. And I think he would have bring in all the qualities that are needed right now. I would doubt if he could actually turn things around completely, but I think he at least would manage to change the atmosphere around the team. And I think that would be a lot right now.
Yeah, well, Funkel likes to play counter-attacking football with fast forwards or big number nines. Schalke don't really have those players.
Well, they have some. Fast player. They have Matondo. They have Raman, and Raman is also pretty fast. And maybe Paciencia will come back in the new year. The options are all limited. But I think it's also and Friedhelm Funkel is a pragmatical coach. He will look at, okay, what do I have here? What can I do with this? And how can I start build from that? But I don't want to convince anybody at Schalke here. But to me, it would be a decent and also logical solution. And I think he would be happy to do it.
Yeah, Friedhelm Funkel, the big Sam Allardyce of the Bundesliga, perhaps coming in to save Schalke. Let's see what happens there. In happier news, I guess, it was another good week for the champions, Bayern Munich, with not especially convincing performances against Wolfsburg and Leverkusen on Saturday, but as they so often do, finding a way to win both games, and especially with the last kick, virtually the last kick of 2020 for them, Robert Lewandowski coming up with the winner away to Leverkusen in a game that could have easily gone Leverkusen's way, but once more Bayern's mentality, quality, whatever you want to call it, prevailed. Was this the game, Christoph, and the result that paves the way for another trophy for Bayern, even though they've been struggling by their standards in recent weeks?
Before the start of this week, we had two undefeated teams in the Bundesliga. One was Wolfsburg and the other one was Leverkusen. At the end of the week, we don't have any undefeated teams in the Bundesliga anymore because the two teams were meeting Bayern. And I think that to an extent tells the story. As you mentioned, that they were winning with the last kick of 2020 in Leverkusen. It was so impressive in a way, because you're right, Leverkusen created a lot of problems for Bayern, especially in the first half. But in the second, the closer it got towards the end of the match, the more you had the feeling that if there would be one team to win it, it would be Bayern. And if you were talking about them being tired and having problems, and they had to take off Leroy Sané, who they brought in during the match, so what in Germany is called Höchststrafe. I don't know what that is in English. And
I mean, I guess it's capital punishment, but it doesn't mean that he was killed.
Yeah, no, he wasn't killed, but
he was killed in a way, so metaphorically.
He was killed, yeah, and so that could have been the story of a very complicated match with a lot of repercussions afterwards, but now it is like, it gives... So football is always a lot about narratives, and this is a narrative, the eternal narrative in the Bundesliga. And in the end, Bayern will win. And what did they do? In the end, they won it. In the end, they won against, in Leverkusen, in the end, they won against Wolfsburg. In the end, they won 7 games in the row where their opponents were leading 1-0. And so it's tough for the opposition, and it gives everybody the feeling that in recent weeks we thought maybe we can get something, maybe we can sneak through to the Bundesliga title, but now the road looks, and I wouldn't say paved for the title, but it will be still rocky and so on. But that was very impressive. It was actually really impressive what they did there.
Well, Bayern's win made all the more impressive that by the fact that none of the usual contenders for the title or supposed ones managed to win. Leverkusen, of course, lost. Leipzig, very disappointing, 0-0 draw at home to Cologne. Dortmund, we talked about. Only Wolfsburg of the top sides managed to bounce back from their defeat against Bayern with a 1-0 win over Stuttgart that we briefly mentioned. So Bayern sitting top with 30 ahead of Leverkusen 28 and Leipzig 28 as well. But Christoph, you were right. This game, this win could have easily been going in a different direction, and the story could have easily been about the struggles of young Leroy Sané getting subbed on and then subbed off after 36 minutes on the pitch, and everyone kind of making the point that yes, he needs to learn, and he was fairly, I guess, professional in his reaction both on the pitch and later on, saying I have to, you know, make the right conclusions and work harder and so on, and all of kind of German football talking about him over the weekend. Where is this going? I mean, is this just something that people in Munich talk about because the team is winning, and the fact that they're winning is less of a story than, you know, a big signing not being quite happy? Or is there sort of a bigger story here, one that we actually need to keep an eye on?
I think we have at least keep an eye on it, because you can argue, yeah, he came back from an injury, Leroy Sané, and he has so that was what Hansi Flick is saying, that he has to develop his form to the best that has happened so far. And but I think that's it's the overall underlying story with Leroy Sané throughout his career, that you sometimes have the feeling that he is taking things not seriously enough from time to time. So he is more the artist who provides the icing on the cake compared to the other ones who are grinding down their opponent. I don't know if that's altogether or was always fair, but at least it's true to an extent. And I think we have to see how he adapts it, because at Bayern, every artist is also helping to grind down the opponent. That's the part of the culture of Bayern, or the DNA of the club. And maybe in the end he adapts to it, or it turns out, yeah, that he doesn't, and then he will probably leave to somewhere else.
Yeah, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge making a point that he hasn't yet develop the Bayern DNA in terms of application, mentality, effort, all the sort of things that have become more important as Bayern have developed a different style of play over the last 10 years. I think it used to be easier for individualists to shine as long as Bayern were playing this kind of hero football where it was very much geared towards individuals doing stuff. Now that they're a collective unit with Thomas Müller leading the line, both in a physical sense, but also as a figurehead for this style of playing with constant movement and putting a lot of pressure on the opposition. Somebody like Leroy Sané sticks out at the moment. And a lot of people are already drawing sort of comparisons with his lack of game time at Manchester City in his last year under Pep Guardiola, and whether, you know, he is geared towards playing that way. And I think you're right. This is a little bit of a make or break situation for him. One point I think we should mention, and I've written about this in the column today, is that there's also a slightly political dimension to this, because Hansi Flick was pretty open about the fact that Leroy Sané wasn't necessarily his preferred buy. He was talking a lot about Timo Werner and how he felt that he could play on the wing, and Werner was a more proven player, I think, in his mind, and Leroy Sané after the injury, and you know, perhaps being not such a workhorse, was maybe less of a fit. And ultimately, the club felt that they knew better, and at Bayern, the club buys the player, of course, with the input of the manager. But if this now doesn't work out, I think it leaves Flick in an even stronger position. Would that be a fair analysis, or am I reading too much into this?
I think the conflicts about who to sign or who not to sign haven't been so big in recent months. I think my impression is that things have calmed down, also about the role of Hasan Salihamidžić and so on, because some things turned out well, others were not so good, but altogether it seems okay. So I think there is no political struggle actually, where now the Hansi Flick is in a stronger position. I think his position after winning the triple couldn't be any bigger, and I think they also tried to sign Werner, or you know that better. But and so I think also it's not too premature to say that Leroy Sané was a flop as a signing. So I think we have to wait a bit more to judge about it.
Oh, that is absolutely true, but I think he has been put on notice. That he needs to really up his game now, and is a bit of a statement. Even if he hadn't been subbed on, just the fact that he was subbed off for Jamal Musiala, 17-year-old, and Flick saying, well, I needed someone to do something for us in attacking situations and treat the ball better. You know, that is a pretty big statement from Flick. One thing that Bayern really need to hope will persist is Joshua Kimmich coming back, because I think his impact after his return from injury was immediate, and Bayern looks so much happier when they have his presence in midfield and also his skills. One thing that I thought was quite shocking, Christoph, I don't know how you felt about it, was the fact that Leverkusen kind of completely negated Bayern's midfield game. I mean, the amount of stray passes and lack of any kind of fluidity in combination was quite bad. I don't think I've seen Bayern, you know, struggle so much in the build-up in a game of this magnitude in recent months. It was quite telling. I mean, on the one hand, Leverkusen did well, and that was part of Peter Bosz's plan, and it worked out very nearly. On the other hand, I think there was also Bayern, A, being tired, and B, just lacking that kind of personnel without Kimmich, without Goretzka, without Thiago, who sadly has gone. The midfield does look a little bit ropey, and Kimmich coming back immediately lifted the quality, didn't it?
When you think of the situation, I mean, he was out for 5 weeks, and they were thinking if they should take him to Leverkusen. And one of the explanations why they took him to Leverkusen is Hansi Flick was saying that it's too good to have him around. Not even on the pitch, so he even seems to make an influence when they are in the dressing room or when they're eating together or sitting on a plane. I don't know. That is tells a lot. But when you started the question, you were saying about the player where they should pray for to be in the team. I think you were talking about the world player, the winner of the Ballon d'Or. Because if I could think of any player in the Bundesliga who makes difference to the rest of all, it's Robert Lewandowski, and again he showed it against Leverkusen with having the final word of the year, and he is so fantastic. It's barely unbelievable.
Yeah, just the 4 goals from him this week to get Bayern the 6 points that they barely deserved. They deserved them, but the 2 goals on Saturday were not quite Lewandowski classics. The first one, a mistake from Hadecki and Jonathan Tah, leaving him with the most simplest of headers, and that last minute strike, a deflection after another Tah mistake very late on, and Kimmich of course winning the ball back, it should be said. But yeah, Lewandowski cutting a very, very happy figure this week, having finally won at least one of the 2 big individual awards that FIFA and France Football bestow, having won the FIFA best award, and Bayern also feeling very, very proud that they were able to, for the first time, actually have a player that was recognized to that extent. So the only previous Bundesliga-based player to actually win an individual award as such was Matthias Sammer in 1996. That's how long it's been for the Bundesliga. But Bayern being able to fulfill Lewandowski's dreams, both in terms of trophies and successes, is part of the reason why 2020 ended the way they did. And there will be an additional pod looking back on Bayern's magnificent year coming out very, very soon. But today, that's, I think, all the angles covered. Christoph, anything else we didn't talk about? I don't think there is. Maybe we should just quickly mention that Borussia Mönchengladbach had another bad game. They lost at home 2-1 to Hoffenheim, and they're now in 8th, sort of treading water a little bit after their fantastic exploits in the Champions League. Perhaps their effort and all, you know, the difficult games in the Champions League catching up with them a little bit domestically. And I guess that's to be anticipated to a certain extent. Anything else you'd like to add before we go?
Honorable mentioning Freiburg, because they got 9 points out of the last 3 games, and I think they changed their season round within these 7 days. So everybody happy at the Breisgau before Christmas.
Yeah, and Freiburg, of course, eternal relegation candidate as far as my personal predictions are concerned, and always proving me wrong, and it seems to be yet another case, but early days. This is a weird, because it goes into the mini winter break after only 13 games. So the usual sort of grand conclusions after exactly half of the season gone are a little bit less relevant, perhaps, or slightly less convincing. But we'll have to see if they can keep it up. At the top, it's very much Bayern's to lose, but you knew that before. So thank you, dear listener. Thank you, Christoph. It's been a very, very exciting first half of the season. It's been a very exciting 2020 full stop. We'll see you on the other side, back with Match Day 14 in early January. Do tune in then. Have a good one. And as we say in Germany, rutscht gut rein.